saying goes, one man's meat is another man's poison, and that would appear to be the case with the literary world and our next guests. They each are taking part in Penn World Voices, the New York Festival of International Literature that's going on now in venues around the city, and they appeared on a panel yesterday entitled Exiles in America. They were each compelled, for different reasons, to leave the land they were born. Yi Yun Li was born in China at the end of the Cultural Revolution, witnessed the protests at Tiananmen Square, and came here to attend university. She has since become a writer of some renown, winning the Pushcart Prize, the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award, and the Plimpton Prize for New Writers. Poet and novelist Chris Abani was imprisoned and tortured in his home country of Nigeria because of his writing, and now lives and works in L.A. But investigative reporter Greg Palast was also included on the panel, an exile from the United States, where he feels sidelined to an alternative press by corporate mainstream media. They all join me now. Welcome back to the show, Greg, and welcome both Yi-Yun Lee and Chris Abani. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
And let me begin with each of you telling us a little bit about how you came to be exiles as a result of your writing. And Chris Abani, let me start with you. What was it that you wrote in Nigeria that led to imprisonment and torture?
I actually wrote a book when I was 16, a novel that was later seen as the blueprint for failed poetry. So that's what started it. It was very unconscious on my part.
Chris, I'm going to have to interrupt because we're having trouble with your line, so we're going to come back to you in a minute. And Yi-Yun Lee, let me move on to you. Tell us about your writing and tell us what brought you to the United States.
I came to the United States to study immunology. I think I'm more like a self-exile because I'd never written anything in China because I didn't want to write. And when I came to America, I discovered my language, which was which happens to be English, and I started to write, and I was really happy.
Did you say you came here to study immunology?
Yes, I didn't come to study writing.
It's a far cry from short story writing.
Oh, I know. I changed my career.
Uh-huh. Do you write full-time now?
I do. I do.
And so do you consider yourself, if not technically, then somehow spiritually or morally an exile?
Yes, I do think so. You know, we always have this joke about a Chinese premier who ordered the killing at the Tiananmen Square. And because in China, people always tell jokes about him in Chinese, and it's okay. So there's this one joke about, you know, somebody goes to the Tiananmen Square and tells a reporter, a Western reporter, say, our premier is an idiot. And he's arrested for revealing the state secret because he's talking it in English. So it's pretty much my situation. I think, you know, I can tell these stories in Chinese and nothing would happen, but if I tell it in English, if I write in English, I'm writing to Western audience. There's a big difference there.
Now, Greg Palast, technically, exile refers to someone compelled by the state to leave the country. This is not your case.
Well, it depends what you call the state, the powers that be. I'm on nonprofit radio. You wouldn't find me on the shekel-driven radio, let me tell you right now. For those who are unfamiliar with my work, I report for the BBC. To get my stories out, I had to cross the Atlantic. I had to leave my country. And I write for the Guardian newspapers of Britain. I think one of the better-known stories that did come back to the United States that I wrote was, for example, that before the 2000 election, Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush knocked off tens of thousands of black voters off the voter rolls, and that fixed the election of 2000. I wanted to report that in my home country when I uncovered it, but I got it on the top of the BBC Nightly News. It was worldwide top news everywhere that the election of 2000 was fixed.
And funny enough,
front pages of the paper.
I remember when that came out.
And you gave me a home here.
The American, right. And we talked about it. But we talked about it, and some of the other American media talked about it as, look what the BBC is reporting.
Right. Well, here I am, an American reporter. I literally had to physically relocate with my family to Britain so I could report the news, the investigations and things I was uncovering in the United States. I'm an investigative reporter, and there is just no home for real investigative reporting in the United States. If it wasn't for, you know, a fat guy in a chicken suit, Michael Moore, I don't think that the election story would have come back to America. We have to kind of bring it back in as a joke frankly, God bless WNYC and the non-commercial cracks in the electronic Berlin Wall. I do want to say, look, we cannot I'm not going to, compare my case with Chris's case out of Nigeria, and I hope he comes back on the line. You're talking bone-crunching dictatorship. I'm talking commercial dictatorship, which can be just as damaging to getting the information to the public and just as damaging to any writer.
Yiyun Lee, do you write in English, hoping that people in China are going to read it because it has some direct or indirect effect on political freedoms there?
I feel ambivalent about that because I just refuse to have my book translated into Chinese.
You refuse to have your books translated into Chinese?
Yes.
Why?
Once they know that I'm writing in English and writing to the world, and then if the book comes back to China, I'm afraid of repercussion. So I'm afraid, people there will be pissed off. So I'm not there. I'm not ready to have the book translated into Chinese.
You mean you don't feel safe even here if someone wants to bring repercussions on you from the government of China?
I don't worry about here, but I also want to, reconnect my connection with the countries. I want to go back. I want to be able to go back to China to visit. And that is what I worry about.
My guests on WNYC are three participants in the Penn World Voices New York Festival of International Literature panel yesterday entitled Exiles in America. We were hearing Greg Palast, an exile in a way from America, working for the BBC and The Guardian, has a book forthcoming called Armed Madhouse, Who's Afraid of Osama Wolf? And the title goes on from there. That's as much of it as we'll give right now. Yiyun Lee, born in China at the end of the Cultural Revolution, become a writer of some renown in this country, writing only in English, refusing to be translated into Chinese, as she was just describing. And back with us now, poet and novelist Chris Abani, imprisoned and tortured in his home country of Nigeria because of his writing, and now lives and works in Los Angeles. And Chris, sorry about the technical difficulties. Let me go back to the question that I asked you at the beginning, which was, what did you write in your country of origin that got you imprisoned and tortured?
I originally wrote a novel, which was later seen as a blueprint for a coup attempt. And then subsequent to that, I got involved in a lot of anti-government theater.
Did the novel include a description of a coup attempt?
No, but it was, I was young, it was a thriller, and it was meant to, it was about neo-Nazis taking over Nigeria, so there was a strategic plan to blow the country up, essentially, yes.
And did you mean it to inspire a revolution?
No, I was a 16-year-old kid writing a book, and I wasn't political at all.
And then you say you got into some more overtly political writing after that?
Well, yeah, after sort of the imprisonment, I became an overt political activist.
I guess that will radicalize someone.
It does, yes, it did in my case.
When did you leave?
I left quite a while ago. I left in 92, and so I've been living away for quite a while. Yeah.
And have you continued to write about Nigeria in the United States?
Well, bits and pieces. I mean, essentially, my childhood is in Nigeria, so there's a lot of material from there. But it's not. I'm moving away more and more, and this is where, for me, the space of exile is interesting. And, at the moment, I'm not really exiled by the government. This is sort of me on self-exile now, sort of protesting the continued lack of democracy in the country. But it's sort of my subject matter has moved and opened up into more international concerns.
Can you go back there safely now?
Officially, I can, yes.
And unofficially?
I'm not willing to find out right now.
Not willing to find out, yeah. Talk more about your writing. You say you've moved into more international themes, but also political themes?
My writing is inevitably political, but the thing is I've become more interested in the human moment rather than in the sort of nationalistic moment. So I've become, I like to think I'm becoming more like James Baldwin in that sense. And so Graceland, which was a novel that was out a year or two ago, which is, still out, but it was a novel that focused primarily on Nigeria and the birth of conscience of a young man in that country. But my new book is about international sex trafficking, and the books after that are sort of dealing with other issues. So, the Nigerian sensibility, because I am Nigerian, always influences the work. But to a large extent, I think that for me now, the sort of the space of exile opens up a different level of dialogue for me.
Yiyun, did I hear correctly that that you may be facing deportation?
Yes, I mean, I'm in the middle of this immigration problem. That I have a legal visa to work here temporarily for a few years, but I applied for American permanent residency, and my petition was denied, and appeal was denied, too.
And if you feel that you cannot go back safely to China, does that inform your immigration status?
Then they would have to go through a different status. I have to apply as a refugee.
You're not trying to do that.
I'm not trying to do that because I want to be. I'm not a refugee.
Yeah. Do you feel, though, that, I mean, you know, you were talking about your writing before and how you fear repercussions if your writing in English was even translated into Chinese and distributed there.
Right.
So if you wanted to pursue some kind of artist refugee status, could you?
I suppose I could, but I'm very stubborn. I wanted to be an artist, not an artist refugee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So what is your immigration status?
At this moment, I have a H-1B working visa, so I can work. I teach in university, so I can teach. But it's temporary, so we're having another petition going on.
Are you following the immigration debate going on in America now?
Yes.
Do you have strong feelings about it?
I have strong feelings about a lot of things, but I don't know. I think I'm more interested in individual stories, so I can't say the picture. I have answers for the big picture questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Greg, is there a distinction that's meaningful between the word exile and expatriate, or
yeah, an expatriate
really
is like Ernest Hemingway going to have fun at a Paris cafe or having a couple months of revolution in Spain. That's an expatriate. An exile is someone who's booted out for or chased out or afraid or cannot get their word out. If you're a writer, if you're silenced and you're forced out. And look, once again, I'm not going to put myself up against what some of these other people have. We had a gentleman on our panel yesterday from China who only spoke Chinese, and so it would be difficult to bring on the air. You have to understand, and when Yiyun is speaking cautiously, the Chinese are listening, okay? He was talking about Falun Gong people.
So is the Department of Homeland Security. So is the Department of Homeland
yes,
Security,
Mr. Cheney, do you want me to speak up? Mr. Negroponte, they're talking about pulling out people's organs who protest, burning their bodies, mass rape. I mean, you're talking about a brutal dictatorship which just got the red carpet treatment from our president, so-called President Hu, Dictator Hu, was here. And it is a terrifying situation. There is a difference. Look, one story I did, for example, which gives an example that three types of censorship that really occurs and requiring people to get out. I did a story about George Bush's gold mining company, which most people don't know that Bush Sr. had one. And they cleared a gold mining property, one of their units.
Was that Harkin Energy?
It was Barrick Gold Mining out of Canada. 50 gold miners, when they cleared the gold mining properties in Tanzania, Africa, their minds are filled in.
That music doesn't mean you're being censored. It means you have to finish this story in 60 seconds. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with three of the panelists from the Exiles in America panel, part of the Penn World Voices New York Festival of International Literature that's going on now in venues around the city. My guests, Yiyun Lee, born in China, who has since become a writer of some renown in this country, writing in English, winning the Pushcart Prize, the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award, and the Plimpton Prize for New Writers, among other things. Greg Palast, who is an American, but found that he had a much easier time getting his Voice of Dissent published after starting to write for European, particularly British news organizations, the BBC and The Guardian. He also does get published by Harper's in the United States, and he has a book coming out called Armed Madhouse. And we have Chris Abani, who was imprisoned and tortured in his home country of Nigeria because of his writing, and now lives and works in Los Angeles. And we can open up the phones. Maybe you want to react to anything in our three guests' stories that you've been hearing so far, or perhaps if you are a recent immigrant or even an exile or a refugee, call and talk about your status. Do you consider yourself in exile, even if you're not formally an exile? How big a part should art play in determining whether or not someone can live here? Does hearing about a great writer's plight make you more inclined to welcome others fleeing physical and economic deprivation? Call us 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Greg, go ahead and finish that story from before the break.
Yeah, very quickly. It's not exactly good lunchtime listening, but it is George Bush's gold mining company, Barrick Gold, in Tanzania. They cleared the gold mining properties. You know, George Bush didn't personally approve this, but 50 miners were buried alive when they covered up the front of the gold mine. And when that story came out in Tanzania, I reported it in The Guardian in Britain. The reporter and journalists out of Tanzania who were helping me on that story, one a lawyer named Tundu Lissu, charged with sedition, beaten, hospitalized, their houses and offices ransacked. So there's the kind of African ham-handed method, bone-breaking, body-crunching. Then we moved to Britain, where the story was pulled from the Guardian's website and papers because we were sued by the gold mining company, and there is no freedom of speech. Most people don't realize this in Britain. Another reason why I'm now exiled from Britain and have come home this year.
There's no constitution.
There is no
freedom
of speech
guarantee.
But there's actually no constitutional, written or unwritten, freedom of the press. You don't have a special right to speak there. In fact, I've argued very strongly that they need a First Amendment right in Britain, and I guess they can borrow ours because, you know, we don't use it. So, so there they have kind of privatized censorship through their libel laws. In addition, I faced charges in Britain under the Official Secrets Act. They have an Official Secrets Act and official censorship in Britain. So I come back to the United States, where we have, you know, land of the free, home of the brave, try to get that the story about George Bush's gold mining company in New York Times. And there it is, Barrick Gold Mining on the front page of the or the story in some form on the front page of the New York Times. It says that that there are certain gold mining companies which have been charged with human rights violations, but neither the word Barrick Gold Mining nor the name George Bush are associated with that story. When I question why this material was left out, the Times is very upset. A Times editor was very upset at the Columbia School of Journalism, saying how the Times doesn't censor anything. And Seymour Hersh, leaned over and said, "Well, that's the editor that got me fired from the New York Times for my reports." So there you go. So there is, there's lots of exile.
But let me challenge you on that.
Yeah.
Why would the Times, which is so critical of President Bush on so many things, whitewash whatever his involvement may have been with this Barrick gold mining? Why would they?
Investigative reporting is difficult. It's expensive. My lawyer in the case is a Times lawyer, Floyd Abrams. And, you know, they know that if they want to run this story, they're going to face a $1 million defense. They will win. You can't stop someone from writing. It's not worth it. That's part of it. There's only certain topics which are permitted. Talking about, you know, African miners dying is not hot news. And certain things are permissible and not permissible. If it's in the daily briefing of the White House, you can say you're for it or you're against it. But that's the news is set. The news agenda is set by the AP, by the White House press spokesman, and that's our story for the day. And you're stuck with it.
Yiyun, I was very interested to read that you once got the attention of one of your teachers by writing a story using the first person plural voice. It was all written as we and us, something an individualistic Westerner would probably never think to do.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other big cultural differences that strike you about American culture, or maybe talk about that decision to write a book in a plural first person voice?
Right, because I remember I went to this this class, and the teacher said, you know, Americans are individualists. Americans pay so much attention to individual, we forget the communal voice. And this communal voice is still present in Asian countries. And at that time, I was thinking about writing this story about the impersonator of a dictator. It's Chairman Mao. So beside that, you know, yeah, I think in our country we still have the communal voice, but it's more of, you know, everybody has to hide their individuality and to join this chorus. So I chose that voice, and it really worked well for that story.
Interesting. Any other cultural differences in writing or as reflected in fiction writing that you think, you know, that you've observed?
For writing, I do think Chinese writers pay more attention to language, you know, in Chinese. They pay more attention to the beauty of the language. Well, I think writing in English, there is a storiness in writing. You have to tell the story.
Let's take a phone call. Tim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tim.
Hi, how you doing? Monier? Yes. I'd like to say that the IMF recently they said that Africa had the highest growth rate, like 5% yearly now. I'd like to know your guess there. What does he thinks about, you know, the Chinese and the president coming over to Africa and help, you know, do a trade and, you know, more increased trade? Because your guest mentioned that he was not returning to Nigeria. And since Nigeria is really a democracy now officially and China is not, should he be able to go back and help push it along? Because Nigeria recently said they, you know, paid all their debt. You know, so there's progress. That's other news from Africa you don't get from the media, you know, positive news.
Tim, thank you very much. We're actually having a lot of trouble for some reason with our phone line to Chris Abani, so he wasn't able to hear that question, and we don't have him up right at the moment. But Yi Yun, part of that concern, China and China's relationship with parts of Africa. So do you have any reaction to that?
I think it's all the strategy of how China develops. I mean, that's my guess, but I don't know, like, for sure. But China is developing, you know, a relationship with Mid East and with African countries. Yeah.
Greg?
Tim, it's the oil. The so-called growth of Africa is the expansion of massive expansion of oil sales out of Nigeria and the and out of Sudan. And Guinea-Bissau. Other than that, there's not much growth going on in Africa. It is still an imploding continent that still suffers from external and internal colonialism. What's happening is that China is playing, in fact, a very dark and evil role, which is to support the kind of murderocracy out of Sudan in return for oil out of Darfur and the south. And you see deals that will be cut by the Chinese, that there is no longer any pressure on any government to maintain any type of reasonable decency towards human rights or writers or non-writers because of the need and the lust for oil. Not that America is short on the lust for oil side, but the Chinese have gotten in the game big time. And now this is another boost for African dictatorships, unfortunately.
We have Chris Abani back on the line with us. And Chris, I understand that you didn't like how I was introducing you as a victim of imprisonment and torture for your writing in Nigeria. Why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Well, no. I mean, it's just that it's very... I mean, everyone else is introduced as a writer, as someone who's... And I'm being introduced as some sort of, you know, drawn and quartered goat, which just goes to continue to sort of perpetrate some of the imagery about Nigeria, but also to misrepresent who I am and what I do and where I am right now. And there are people who are being imprisoned by the current democracy in Nigeria, supported by America. There are people being tortured in Nigeria. I just feel it's very disingenuous that I would be sort of living in America and still being talked about in this sort of way. It's not only is it disingenuous, but it's limiting, and it suggests it's a kind of almost a profiting on pain that I really don't want to be part of.
Right. Well, I'm sorry that it came off that way. I think we were trying to introduce the three of you as having the commonality of being exiles in some sense, as defined by the panel you were all on in the Penn World Voices series yesterday. But I hear what you're saying. And I should mention that there's an excerpt from Chris Abani's novel, Graceland, that we've put up on our reading page. So you can go to our webpage, go to WNYC.org, and click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you can read an excerpt from Chris Abani's novel, Graceland, and appreciate him as a writer. So, Chris, do you want to talk about your writing at all in that context?
Well, no, also I just want to take off on sort of what Greg was saying about Africa and being an imploding continent and sort of China's role in it. but I missed half of the conversation, so I'm assuming we talked about America's continued role in it and sort of America's continued role, for instance, in all of the torture and murder and the dictatorships that go on in Nigeria, for instance, and, you know, George Bush's current interests and manipulations involving Charles Taylor in that region.
Oh, yes.
As well.
Right, and Greg, you were talking about that Mayan
story.
Yes,
in fact, let's. There is the issue of when he mentions Charles Taylor, Chris. For those who don't know that, he was the dictator. He was kind of the elected dictator, a warlord that basically won election by holding the entire nation hostage. Elect me, or I'll cut your hands off. Charles Taylor was the dictator of Liberia. And went into exile in East Africa, and the human rights courts have, of course, been trying to grab him. The U.S. played a very...
No, actually, Greg, he's in Nigeria.
He's in Nigeria. Okay.
America asked us to take him in.
That's right.
And then they tried to come and invade Nigeria on the guise that they were liberating Charles Taylor to face international conspiracy charges.
Well, you know, the other problem, though, of course, is the United States that kind of put Charles Taylor in power in Liberia. So maybe the United States ought to invade itself then, if that's the if that's the punishment for the crime. And that is a big problem. We get back this problem that you can't just look at evil governments punishing poor defenseless authors. You have to look at what's pushing those governments to be militarized and to stay in power. And you have to go back to the commercial interests. And again, in the case of Nigeria, it's oil. And so you can't just take this little segment of the discussion and just talk about evil governments and censored authors. Who put the evil governments there? Why are these authors censored? What are they writing that's being censored? And a lot of it is about this kind of commercial political lockup between internal elites and external commercial interests like the oil companies.
So, Chris, do you think there's something important to say there about the relative freedom to express yourself in the United States versus policies that the United States will support in other countries?
Yeah, but I mean, in a certain sense, I find myself in many ways sort of similar to where Greg is, where you can apparently speak your mind, but, you know, you have the freedom to speak in America, but the freedom to be censored and ignored in a certain kind of way. So it's not a real freedom in that sense. And so that's, I think, part of my initial resentment about the way I was being portrayed, because what happens is it becomes a way, in a way, for Americans to sort of have a moment of the, you know, oh my God, what you must have been through, and never have to deal with what's going on directly with their country. Now, I teach in Riverside, and I have young kids who have died in this war in Iraq, and who have no reason being there and have no reason dying, and sort of those ways in which I've given chances to speak on, but only as an exile, only as a victim of torture, but never as someone who has a relevant contemporary voice, either as literature or as politics within the context of this new country that I live in.
Yi-Yun, can you relate to that?
Yes, totally. I think, you know, I was talking to my friends yesterday. There are so many exiles who don't have voices, but, you know, the ones who get attention are writers, you know, sometimes artists. I think that was the writer's job, you know, to portray these people, to show these people's world to the readers.
Let's take another phone call. Joan Liu in Ramsey, you're on WNYC. Hi there, you're on the air.
Yes, I just have one question because the Chinese writer, she mentioned something in regarding her experience in 1989 as a student. And the question is, would she have any plan to write about the story of what she saw during that period? And I think there's a lot of story need to be told, especially to the Western audience.
Yi-Yun?
Yes. Yeah, I was a high school student, and I saw a lot, and I did a few nonfiction pieces that, you know, I published a piece in the Britain about it, and I published a couple other pieces. So I am planning to work more on that too. Yes.
Thank you for your call. Alex in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Lera. Hello?
Yeah, hi, thank you. Go ahead with your point. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just troubled by Chris Agbani's claim that it's wanted in Nigeria. Because if there are really people who are wanted in Nigeria during the military government of Abacha, and if there are false claims made in the U.S. here, it kind of diminishes those people who really have genuine have fear of being persecuted in Nigeria. So that's why this Chris Agbani name that you're mentioning, I've never heard of Chris Agbani before. And I published a newspaper in this town, and I've also been a journalist in Nigeria. I've never heard of Chris Agbani being hunted by Abacha. So people have to be careful to make claims on radio, because there are people who are actually born in Nigeria, and they're also living here in New York.
You're the publisher
of... Alex, first of all, let me just answer that. Alex, I was born in Nigeria, and at no point have I claimed to be prosecuted by Abacha. I was prosecuted long before Abacha was the one doing things. So it might be, as a journalist, it's also important to get your facts straight before you come on radio and start pointing fingers at people.
All right, Alex, thank you for your call. I wonder, Chris and Yiyun, do you feel pressure to fulfill your new country's expectations of the old one? Do people resist hearing certain truths that you've learned, Yiyun?
It's very interesting. If you go out to meet, sometimes readers or people, and they put you in a box, they like to consider you as a victim of a regime, and that's not my concern. When I write about China, I really write about these people, who could have been American. If they were born in America, they would do the same thing. So I always tell my readers, I'm writing the same people. Yes. So I do think, that's my goal as a writer, not to show, only the political system, but also the people inside it. And they're the same people here, too.
Greg, do you, even you have any experience of that, working with the Brits?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a big joke, that I was told that I was the big booster of America and I'm in love with everything American, which may seem funny to my American readers because I'm a dissenter. But I do actually have a great love of America. We are an entire exile nation. Let's remember, we're all here. I'm an illegal alien. That is, my grandmother snuck through Canada and immigration grabbed her just short of her 100th birthday. But one of the things that's happened in Britain is that, I'm expected, first of all, to apologize constantly for my country. And I say, I'll take the blame for my president, but my country's pretty darn good and has a lot to teach the rest of you. But yes, I'm supposed to play the American in Britain.
All right. That's going to be the last word on this, I'm sorry to say. So I want to thank all of you, Yiyun Lee, Chris Abani, and Greg Palast, for joining us. They were all on the Penn World Voices, the New York Festival of International Literature Exiles in America panel yesterday. And if you hurry, you can make it to the Strand Bookstore at 12th Street and Broadway, where Chris and Yiyun will each be doing readings at noon, along with some other writers as part of the Penn Festival. So thanks to all of you very much for coming on. And Yiyun and Chris, good luck at the reading.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, that new Spanish national anthem. We'll play it, translate it, and talk about how it fits in to the immigration debate. Stay with us.